I am joined by my guest, Siobhan Cayley. Now, I should have asked you, Siobhan, am I pronouncing your surname right? Is it Cayley or Carly?
It's Callie, actually.
Callie, well, it's, there we are, another version again. How are you this morning, Siobhan?
I'm very well, thank you, Kerry.
Very good.
And how are you?
Well, I think at the moment, you know, doing all right, really. I mean, many of my listeners may say otherwise, but, you know, we won't go into that. But thank you so much for joining me. And you join us from the south side of London. So please feel free, give us a little bit of the background story of Siobhan and what you are all about, Siobhan.
Yes, I'm living in South London in Crystal Palace. I'm a teacher, really. That's what I started off doing.
Yep.
So that's why I'm interested in books and writing in particular, because I think that what we read as children really sort of shapes us
into our
adulthood and gives us very strong messages about the world. So that's why I'm sort of fascinated by children's literature and... That's why I want to write a children's book.
I see. Now then, children's books, we will move on to the question of something I should know in a few moments' time. But I'm also interested about the fact that you've travelled around a bit and you taught English over in Greece for a while.
Yeah, I did. When I trained as a teacher, I worked at a comprehensive Northampton, actually, for a year.
Yeah.
And I'd kind of had enough teaching by then.
Right.
So I had my midlife crisis very early and did my Shirley Valentine when I was 22, and I went to live in Greece. The idea that was that I was going to travel around the world. I thought, I've got this teaching qualification, I can live in different places.
Yes.
But I ended up in Greece with the intention to stay for a year, and ended up staying for 4 years because I just kind of fell in love with Greece. And I still kind of think of it as my second home.
And was that mainland Greece, or were you on some of the islands?
I was living in this, it's a little coastal village, sort of halfway between Athens and Corinth on the south.
Oh, yes, yeah.
In the south of Greece. And it was just a little fishing village, and literally nobody there spoke English, so I had to learn Greek.
Right.
And I felt very at home there. It's really strange. I just felt straight away, I felt really at home in Greece. I felt like it just really suited me. But I always had a fascination with Greece. I'm not quite sure why. But when I was at primary school, I remember doing a project about Greece. In those days, they used to say, oh, take yourself off the afternoon and do a project about something.
Mm-hmm.
So I just decided to do a project about Greece.
Well, and, see there's anything wrong with that, I must profess. It is one of my favourite places to go to for holidays when we get the chance to jump on aeroplanes, particularly the different islands and so on. I think, as you say, it is a very, very magical place, Greece, in general. So let's talk then about the idea then of actually getting down to doing some writing. How long was it, after you'd sort of done your different sorts of teaching from Northampton to Greece, and clearly that's, you know, there's quite a distance in between. So what was it then that made you think, yeah, I think it's time for me to do some writing?
Well, I've always done a bit of writing. I used to do a bit of freelance feature writing just in between jobs.
Yeah.
When there was a bit more work around, it's not so much of it now. But I always kind of felt like fiction was beyond me. I thought that's just a challenge too far, and I was kind of scared to try, really. I did try to write some chick lit years ago. It was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had this idea when I was working in a school of writing a story that would help children to learn maths. So I wrote this book called The Secret Life of a Math Magician, which is actually terrible. So I wrote that about 4 years ago, and I sent it round to different publishers. And one of the people that I sent it to was Sean at Candy Jar Books. And he gave me the nicest rejection I've ever had, and he took the time to talk to me about what was wrong with it, but also, you know, what I might be interested in writing in the future. He's just very encouraging.
Yes, yes.
Sort of encouraged me to carry on. So When I wrote Something I Should Know, I went back to him, and obviously we already had that sort of connection, and he just loved it. He took it. He said, yeah, straight away. So I really like it. It really fits with our...
And I mean, that really does just show how you do have to be as encouraging as you possibly can to sort of up and coming authors, doesn't it? Even if, as you say, that first attempt maybe is felt not to quite sort of reach the mark that people want, but clearly it's borne fruit for you.
Well, I'd say everyone needs to write a practice book. That's how I look at it. I think it's all good practice, and it's very easy to give up because it is difficult to get published. But also, publishing isn't the be-all and end-all. You know, if you enjoy writing, you love writing, then, you know.
Absolutely fair point. Yeah, yeah. So then, let's talk about Something I Should Know. Now then, I've already told our lovely listeners that it touches upon various themes. It's aimed very much at children around the sort of 9 to 12-year-old age range. But please, take up the story for me.
Yeah, so it's a book about family secrets and finding your identity. So think Mamma Mia meets Long Lost Family.
Yeah. So
it's about a girl called Olivia. She's 13, and she doesn't know who her father is. She's never been told anything about him. It's always been kept quiet. It's something that no one ever mentions in the family, and she's sort of got used to that. Things come to a head when she has a homework assignment where she has to draw her family tree. So she draws one side and the other side is completely blank.
Mm.
And, you know, she goes to her mum and she said, look, mum, I can't give this in as my homework, you know. I'm 13 now, you need to tell me, you need to tell me the truth. But her mum just digs her heels in and says, no, you're too young to understand, it's too complicated, I'll tell you when you're older. And so Olivia, the character, is very angry. She goes to her cousin, who's the same age as her, her cousin Charlie. Her cousin is fascinated with reality TV shows, and she said, I've got this great idea. You need to go on this TV show where they reunite family members who've lost touch. It's a show called Find Your Family.
Yeah.
So they decide to apply to go on the show without telling anybody. But then they realised that you have to be 21 to fill out the application form. So they decide to pose as Olivia's mum and put it in on her behalf.
I see.
Secretly. So they have to overcome quite a few obstacles in the way and do some sleuthing, and things aren't easy. But eventually they do get invited to go on the show. And there is a bit of a twist at the end. So I don't really want to spoil the ending, but it is a happy ending.
Well, I should hope so, too. I mean, if it's aimed at children between about 9 and 12, then rightly so. But, I mean, clearly, it is, as we said, touching on some quite important themes that no doubt probably will and do affect many, many, many children all over the country and, indeed, all over the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the sort of light-hearted style, you know, the way I've written it, but it does touch on more serious issues, as you say, like family secrets and the rights of children to know their heritage. I think it's a really strong impulse, you know, it's just a very primal need, you know, where
indeed.
You come from, and that's one of the reasons why Long Lost Family and the reality TV show is so successful.
Well,
I think people identify with it, and it's also, I mean, I also raise questions about reality TV. I want, and I don't want to tell my readers what to think.
No, no.
But I just want them to maybe query other people's motives. Because I don't know about you, but when I watch reality TV, I like Long Lost Family. It's very sort of heartwarming. But there is a part of me that feels like a voyeur when I'm watching it. I feel like it's very intimate.
Mm.
And it's just some of these very private stories. And is it really suitable for entertainment? And that's one of the questions that comes up in the book. That's what Olivia's mum said. She said, we should just sort this out on our own. We don't need to go on a TV show. But on the other hand, it's the TV researchers that find all the information, and they sort of fill these gaps that are left maybe by the adoption agencies or, you know, but people who can't find any leads to their family members. People who are adopted and no records and things like that they deal with. So, you know, I think it's, I'm not saying they're bad, but I'm just saying that, you know, it's, I think stories, it's good to sort of make people think a little bit.
Well, absolutely. Sort of, yeah, as you say, look at it from a slightly different angle and so on. So now, when actually is the book being published, or has that big date already come and gone?
It's coming out on Thursday, actually, on the 30th.
This coming Thursday. Oh, right. So we are very up to date, which is good for us. We like that. And how long did it actually take you to get to that stage where you thought, yep, that's it, it's ready, ready to go, hand it over to Candy Jar?
Good question. I actually wrote the beginning of it as part of a writing workshop that I went to. Mm-hmm. You know, one of those terrifying things where they make you sit down and write something and you read out critics.
Yeah.
And I remember just pouring with sweat. It was like the most terrifying thing I'd ever done, but I made myself do it because I wanted to be better at writing.
Right.
And I only had to write the first three chapters, so I didn't really ever intend to finish it. It was just an exercise that I did. During lockdown, I found myself thinking about it, and I had a bit more time, and I was thinking, like, what did happen to those characters?
Yeah.
What happened at the end?
Well, I mean, the thing is, of course, as you say, you're making them, they become real, don't they, then, with you? And you say, there's a story to be told and finished off.
Yeah, that's right. And I kind of felt it was a shame to kind of get that far and not doing the thing. So I asked my daughter to set me a deadline because I'm a terrible procrastinator and I need discipline. So she did. She set me a deadline. I think it was the 30th of July or something.
Right.
And I did finish it. And, and I started sending it off. And, then we had the conversation with Sean at Candy Jar.
Yes.
And, all went quite well from there.
We should sort of reiterate to those people perhaps who aren't aware, Candy Jar are a Cardiff-based publishing company who do some really, really good work, and I've been very privileged to have lots of the different writers, authors, etc. from Candy Jar come along and come into the studio here, and of course many are scattered all over the country, so every now and again, or quite recently, we've done it quite regularly then, where we've rung people up and said, come and tell us all about the book. Now, the question is, Siobhan, clearly you are going to hope that the reaction is good and positive, as I'm sure it will be. So, is there another book then ready on the stocks to go after this?
Well, I am working on another book, actually, which is it's about a character of similar age, and it's also about family secrets. And it's about a girl who finds out that her dad can't read or write. And it only comes to light when her mum dies, and lots of things start to unravel. it's another thing that I wanted to kind of explore. Because I used to teach adult literacy, and that's another fascinating sort of area. Like, how do people end up as adults not able to read and write? And it's an amazing number of people that fall through the cracks in the system.
Yes.
And how difficult life is, and how people manage to cover it up and to get through.
Yeah, no, it is a fair point. So you've got the ideas. It's a question now of having the time to sit down and do that, because clearly you're a busy woman with all the other, you know, facets of your life to consider as well.
Yeah. I mean, I work full time. I work. I'm a civil servant, so I work at the Department for Education. That's pretty busy. But, you know, my children get a bit older now, so I do have time. It's just, I don't have, as I said, it's the discipline.
Well,
deadline.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, Siobhan, that I always like to ask the authors that come on the programme is a little bit about, you know, their writing pattern and where they, when they start, whether it's a 9-to-5 thing, which clearly in your case it can't be because you're already doing a 9-to-5 job. So are you a great one for burning the midnight oil?
Well, I think I am a bit of a night owl, but apparently there are two kinds of writers. There are plotters and pantsers. And I would love to be a plotter, where you sit down and you plot the whole thing out and you're, like, really organised and you know how long each chapter's going to be, but my brain just doesn't work like that. So I'm a pantser, so I've got to take my pants. So I'll do, I might just do a random chapter that comes to me.
Yes.
Or, you know, I'll write a diary entry for a character because I'm trying to kind of understand what's going on in their head and make them sort of real. And
yes.
So, yes, I don't work in a particularly organised way, and I have lots of little notebooks, and then I have make a note and I can't find it. And, yeah, I really wish I was I was more organised. But I think it gets there in the end. I think you get very obsessed with your own book. You get very kind of, you know, you wake up at night and think, oh, I know how to solve that problem in the plot, you know, and you come up with ideas and you get very sort of...
And I mean, that's very much why you need to have the notepad and pen by the side of the bed, isn't it? Because invariably these things do come to you at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, I think so. I think for me, that's true.
And we've touched on the fact that, yes, obviously you've enjoyed writing for children and how really it is so important, isn't it, to be able to hook children in at as early an age as possible to the joys of reading. So, you know, I think the age group that you're talking about here with this particular book, obviously about Something I Should Know, again, that is a really important age as well, isn't it? Because clearly around the sort of when particularly with girls getting, you know, towards 11, 12 years of age, there's so many other things going on in their life as well. Reading maybe sometimes then can be pushed to the side a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think children want to read and they want to get their hands on books, and a lot of children don't have access to books. Also, there's lots of different kinds of reading emerging. Like, children will read online. My son really likes graphic novels. He reads online.
Yes.
If I bought him a book, it was, even if it was a graphic novel, he wouldn't read a real book. It's just like, we've moved on from that. But I still think that there's a huge market because it's nice to have a book in your hand, but also for younger readers, they need to sort of be able to look back or maybe look up a word they don't understand, or, you know, I think that process is easier with a physical book.
I think that's true.
The issues that I'm dealing with, I'm sort of trying to kind of get into the mindset of a 13-year-old, because, you know, it's their emerging identity and you're wondering who you are, and I think that's a really fascinating age to write for.
Well, this is the point I was thinking about then, that, I mean, yes, it is very much that classic sort of in-between age, isn't it, really, for boys and for girls, but I suppose particularly for girls. And it's great that, you know, there are novels about that really, you know, will speak to them and give them something to think about. And obviously this, as we've said, this theme is clearly one that could well be very close to home to a lot of children.
I mean, there are certainly lots of children who are estranged from one of their parents or other, you know, other things going on.
Yes. Well,
yeah, I mean, I hope the readers just experience that, and it's still an interesting issue, because I think you always got to think, what if, and that, you know, you always like to read about how other people overcome obstacles.
Yes.
One of the challenges for writing for this age is that they don't have much power, they don't have much agency, so you have to find ways for them to kind of drive the story and drive the plot forward.
Surely. No. Well, that I think that's probably very true.
Yeah.
So it's coming out now this coming week. Obviously, we're going to keep our fingers crossed that it is well received. We'll mention again, obviously, yes, it's Candy Jar, are the publishers in Cardiff. And do you have a website or Facebook pages or Twitter accounts or anything like that?
I only have Twitter. I find Twitter is the thing that seems to suit me the most. It's just really simple and immediate. It's Siobhan Kelly at Polly Kelly.
Okay, so would you be kind enough to spell that one for our lovely listeners?
Yeah, so Siobhan is Siobhan, Kelly is Kalli,
mm-hmm.
at Polly Kelly, Pollikalli. Kelly is the Greek word for good.
Right.
That's
my name. There we are. So we've learned something today, which is always good in my book. Well, Siobhan, obviously, we wish you every success, as I say, with this.
Thank you,
and
Terry.
Clearly, you know, I hope that then, as we said, you hit the floor running now then with a follow-up. But certainly, it sounds to me as though it could be of great interest to a lot of our listeners, obviously, for their children or their grandchildren. So, as we said, it's called Something I Should Know by Siobhan Kelly. Thursday, you say, this week it's officially being launched?
Yeah, it's out on Thursday, yeah. It's already available on the Candy Jar website.
Great. So that's it. So if people want to go along to the Candy Jar website and have a little look, you will find it there. And Siobhan, obviously, we look forward to perhaps speaking to you again a little bit further down the line then when you have something new then for us to chat about.
Oh, that's a good, nice thought. That's a nice thought to end on.
There we are. Well, thank you so thank you so much for joining me from Crystal Palace. You were saying they were playing a match last night. You could hear them down the road. So they were absolutely from the south of London. But thank you so much, and we look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thank you for having me, Kerry.
Thank you, Siobhan. Cheers. So there we are, ladies and gentlemen. That is Siobhan, and an interesting book. Sounds to me like it anyway. Let's have a little bit of A Losing Game. James Carr.